ABC Radio Australia.
Over the weekend, thousands of protesters took to the streets of Belém in Brazil, calling for action from industrial nations at the COP30 UN climate talks. It comes as the climate talks reach the midway point, with world leaders expected to join negotiators to hammer out a deal to reduce carbon emissions. The US is not taking part in this year's talks after withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, but it hasn't stopped the rest of the world from taking part in negotiations. And there's still question marks over who will host next year's COP meeting. We go to Belém, where Salah Dr. George Carter, the Deputy Head of the Department of Pacific Affairs at the Australian National University, is standing by. With that, I say Malore Soifua, Salah, and welcome to the Pacific Beat.
Langia Malore Soifua, thank you very much. Bunjia from Belém.
Oh, look, always appreciate your time. Doctor, look, how big were those protests, though, that took place over the weekend in Belém? What was the message that the climate protesters were trying to share?
Yes, the climate march is always one of the centerpieces of these international talks, especially for climate change COP. And it's always run on the Saturday of the midweek, led by various different NGOs, and we saw great passion. Our civil society from across the Pacific and across Australia were also there in present. It's a peaceful march, and it's there to reverberate the need for greater action, the call to fossil fuel producers and also co-producers to bring down the emissions, calling to negotiators to be more ambitious with greater integrity. Going to the venue yesterday was quite difficult. What usually is a 10-15 minute bus ride took us almost an hour and a half or 2 hours to go around the peaceful march. But it was a great sight to see, you know, that level of activism and advocacy, especially by Brazilian and South American protesters and their flair. You know, it's something very different. We didn't see this in Baku last year, but you didn't really see that in other COPs, but it was great to see that this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, most recent COPs didn't really allow protests, so this is a bit of a change, right?
That's right. And it is part of the, you know, climate activism, you know. It's not just negotiators trying to get out the best deal in terms of stabilize greenhouse gas emissions and greater, you know, support for adaptation, but this is also part of the climate community. And, you know, to have a COP in a country like Brazil that allows these voices, whether they're not there as negotiators but out on the streets, you know, and to be organized and it's peaceful, it's a great sight to see as well. I mean, like many of our Pacific climate warriors and other activists from Pacific, you know, they're protesting and saying to our Pacific negotiators, hold the line, you know, we're here, out here supporting you. So it's also great energy for us to see this play out here or on the streets of Belém.
All right, well, let's get straight into, you know, the talks itself. What has been some of the big takeaways from the first week of COP30?
Yes, so I think what we see, I mean, after the first week, what we can say is it's still very slow. It's very slow going inside the negotiations. Like past years, what we try to bring forth to put emphasis on in terms of issues around climate financing or climate adaptation, they're always, we can never get them through the line. You know, we went through what's known as the subsidiary bodies, SBI 63, and what we saw is we couldn't complete the task, or even on the work around gender, the work around technology, the work around adaptation. That wasn't completed the first week. So we'll now go into the second week, which starts tomorrow. And this is where it will intensify. And usually it's the first week, we try our best to move the negotiations as fast, but you have countries, oil-producing countries, or countries who want to ensure that Africa are considered in the negotiations. So there's a whole lot of politics that come in the first week. But it's the second week when you have sort of the ministers will now start to arrive. If there is a tense point and we can't move it through because of what the officials are negotiating, they will then ask the ministers to negotiate. And tomorrow, well, this is when officially Brazil assumes the presidency, meaning they will now bring their flair of negotiating style to convene the meeting. They will have to encourage or seek out countries which have disagreements. Even countries like the United States, they may not be here present or actively negotiating, but they use other countries as proxies to elucidate their you know, some of their tasks. So Brazil has to work with these countries to remove these disagreements.
Well, look, I know that you have been to a lot of COP meetings. I'm just wondering, has there been much progress, though, do you feel, in working towards some sort of agreement that Pacific countries will be happy about?
Absolutely. I mean, my first COP was back in 2015, the making of the Paris Agreement, and we've followed that ever since to even now. And we've seen the growth of Pacific presence here. You know, what started back then is a few negotiators, ambassadors huddling to the side of a cafe and planning our meetings and planning, you know, our strategies throughout the week, has now become, you know, quite a big enterprise of a strategy for presidents and prime ministers when they arrive. There's a regional strategy for ministers, for a regional strategy for officials, to even side events, pavilions that showcase the resilience of the Pacific, but also key areas where partners can support in terms of our climate action. So it's come, there has been, have been a lot of wins over the, and what we are seeing this year is sort of the emphasis of Pacific diplomacy here is ensuring issues around loss and damage financing, ensuring that the goal that was agreed to of long-term the $3 billion, it's honored. You know, countries come in pushing oil-producing countries to cut their emissions, greater targets. This is a continuing. And while the wins may be seen as small from the outside, but certainly within the negotiations, these are the without the Pacific pushing many of these issues, even areas of ocean and financing for ocean, we won't be able to see that back home. But what we, the big win is the solidarity and how united the Pacific is. I always, we bring our students and we bring other academics here to study this, you know, this diplomacy. And we say there's no other multilateral forum that's like this. And even people who work on plastics or people who work on PB&J, they come and study big negotiators in this and the strategies we use, because then they'll employ that in their work. It's one that's something that for many Pacific countries, I mean, to be proud, the type of activism, it's not, it's coordinated, it's coherent, but also very effective. And we see it building year after year. And it's not just the role of academics here. We also see the role of media as fundamental. I mean, the work such as people like Lisa Williams and Sarah from Island Business, getting that news out and that's part of all of this. And also, we're also anticipating what next year could be. And I think that's, that will be the icing on the cake if we get it this week.
Absolutely. Well, look, we've only just got a few minutes left, Salah, but I do want to ask you, you know, when we look at 2027, we understand COP will be hosted by Ethiopia, right, in the city of Addis Ababa. But I'm just wondering, is it a worry we still don't know who will host next year's event, given that actually both Australia and Turkey are not backing down?
Yes. I mean, you know, we would all love to make the decision yesterday. But it is the that is the politics of hosting. It's not a con- I mean, it is a concern in terms of logistics, but it's not a concern in terms of solidarity with Australia. I say this because when we suggested this policy 6 years ago to have Pacific and Australia COP, we wanted to rebuild the relationship between Australia and the Pacific in terms of climate change. Our prime ministers weren't talking, our ministers weren't talking. We did not see eye to eye in our policies. Where do we see ourselves now? Even without a COP, we have prime ministers hugging each other, Australia and Tuvalu. We have ministers, you know, WhatsApping each other. There's a lot of connection now with our officials. Mm. And that is the key reason why we suggested this policy. And so our connection is much stronger. Our diaspora and our people are much stronger in the pushing for climate action. We're pushing climate action within the domestic Australia. And we're also creating more synergies with people across the Pacific. So that's the greater big picture that we have seen and we're very proud of. The hosting allows us to share that with the world and scale all of our work that we've done over the last 10 years. That's the icing of the cake. But if we don't get it, I think we should always be proud that we've done quite a lot of great work in terms of bringing our people together, our leaders together, and we see eye to eye. Yes, we still have decisions in Australia which are not great in terms of opening oil and gas and coal operations. But we also see the essential of us working together. And that's another important win for us. And that we are also able to speak out to Australia when, Pacific are able to speak out and talk about integrity and fight for integrity. And that's a very open and strong and vibrant relationship about climate change that has come out from the last few years of preparing for a COP that we hope happen. But if it doesn't happen, we should still be proud.
Well, there is speculation, right, Salah, that the event could be shared. I mean, do you even think that's a possibility? Can you think about having different part of the meetings on different sides of the world? I can only imagine the logistics would probably be a nightmare for attendees.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, having shared will be a first in terms of, if it's leaders meeting in a different place, officials meeting in a different place. I mean, funding and putting people at different sides, at different end will be different. What I do see and what I'm following here at the negotiations is the Pacific are here strong with their leaders and officials. They want the best deal if it's also shared. You know, they do not want to, it may be Turkey and Australia, taking important parts, they want to be part in both or in all. You know, they want to these countries to ensure that if you're going to host, you also have the Pacific right there at the center. And that's the other diplomacy that's happening within these meetings in the last 2 weeks. I see leaders are very, want to lose the bid for Australia, but they, if it goes to different ways, they also make sure that the Pacific is at heart of both these options, and they want to make sure that the issues from the Pacific, the people from the Pacific are also heard. And that's an important part of, you know, these negotiations. So we may not get it all, but at least we also want the best for our people, but also in terms of the message and the outcomes, that it reflects the key outcomes that the Pacific have been pushing and wanting to, in terms of co-hosting this with Australia.